Welcome to Extremely Live. I am Micah Rock and Roll, and today I am sitting down with Julius Weil, who has had a storied career in the toy business and has worked on things that you absolutely have heard of. Welcome, Julius. Thanks so much for doing this.
Mike, it's a pleasure. I've known you for years. We've shared meals together, and love your comic book.
Oh, you're the best. Yes,
Orange,
you were.
Yes,
you were a big early supporter. You got real excited about it, and it meant a lot to me.
Good.
So, I know one thing you've worked on through your son. He told me this. You're a creative director, and you worked in toy commercials. I don't know if you still do. Do you still do that?
Oh yeah.
Okay, I was curious.
Over 30 years in toys, probably over 45 years, probably in advertising, then wow. Toys one day.
So yes, I found out that you worked on the commercial for Mr. Bucket, which for some reason
yes, I did.
Has been lodged in my brain. I remember the first time I saw the commercial. I was at my friend Jesse's house, and we didn't have live television growing up, but I would watch TV at my friend's houses, and Mr. Bucket came on the television, and it was like, how does it even go? It's like, Mr. Bucket, put the balls in something or other.
I'm Mr. Bucket. Put the balls in my top. I'm Mr. Bucket. Yeah. From my mouth, they will pop. I'm Mr. Bucket. We're all going to run. I'm Mr. Bucket. Buckets of fun.
So,
by the way, that jingle was written, the jingle itself was written by Richie Solomon, a good friend of mine, and also a toy guy over the years. The actual storyboard was done by Maurice Mahler. He was the art director. And then I went to Vancouver with Nita Davenport, and we shot it.
Mr. Bucket!
That's right, I'm Mr. Bucket. I'm Mr. Bucket. Toss your balls in my top, I'm Mr. Bucket. Out of my mouth and we'll pop, I'm Mr. Bucket. We're all gonna run, I'm Mr. Bucket.
The game's Mr. Bucket. The first to get their balls into Mr. Bucket wins, but look out, because the balls will pop out of his mouth.
I'm Mr. Bucket. The balls pop out of my mouth. I'm Mr. Bucket. A ball is what I'm about. I'm Mr. Bucket. We're all gonna run. I'm Mr. Bucket.
Mr. Bucket from Milton Bradley.
I remember being a crass, naughty young boy and making the joke, put the balls in my mouth, of course.
Exactly.
I'm sure that was happening all over the United States during that.
Why do you think people remember it?
Exactly. I literally was like, is it put the balls in my mouth? But no.
Folks, please go on YouTube.
Yeah.
Look up Mr. Bucket.
I will. I'll
give it a hits. I actually have it on one of my YouTube, Wild One, WEILONE. Look it up. Give it some hits. Give it some love.
That's great. I'll
Mr. Bucket's still around.
I'll put a link to it. But yeah, that's you worked on real stuff that has lodged itself in the psyche of the American public. But yeah, I want to talk to you about your career and just about you growing up and how you found your way to this successful career. So I like to start by asking people where they're originally from. So where did you grow up?
Okay, I'll go into my accent. I was born in Romania. Truth. I came here when I was 6 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yes, lived in Brooklyn. I lived in Brooklyn until 1995. Not your regular, living in Brooklyn, basically a generation after all the immigrants. Mm. We were late immigrants. Lived in Williamsburg before it became Hipsterville. got a full Jewish education in yeshiva. There's a path to advertising. thou shalt not lie. Buy my product. Anyway, and then went to School of Visual Arts. I wanted to be an illustrator. I wanted to be a comic book artist.
Ah. That's why you're terrible at it.
I was terrible at it. I get the visual arts and all these kids from art and design are there, and I'm going, oh shit, this is not going to work. So then SVA had the student lounge. That's where all the good shit happened. So me and my friends are sitting there, and they're taking advertising. And they're struggling, and I come up with the headlines. You know, oh yeah, why don't you do this? Why don't you say that? You know, because I have a big mouth, and could turn a phrase. He said, you know what? You should go into advertising. So I go, you know what? Well, I got nothing better to do. Sure, because I'm not going to be an illustrator. That's for sure. I'm not doing comic books. Exactly.
A much more lucrative. You made the more lucrative choice, I'm sure.
Yeah. There are a couple of guys that made it in there. I don't know if you know this guy, Baton Lash. He passed away about 5 years ago. He was in charge of Archie. He wrote Archie he worked on Archie. He became like the executor for Will Eisner.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, Ralph Bakshi went to SVA, knew him.
Yep.
So there are a couple of guys that made it, you know?
That's great. Yeah, I just recently went to gallery that had it was all Will Eisner original art. Did you go to that?
I didn't make it to that, but yeah.
It was cool.
I had Will Eisner for one year.
That's great. Yeah, you told me this. Yeah. You were taught by the man himself. You know, I couldn't convince my wife to let me buy some original Will Eisner art, but let me tell you, it was reasonably priced. I was floored.
It is reasonably priced. He is the father of comic books.
Yeah, graphic novels.
He told Siegel and Schuster that they weren't ready for Superman. That they should go back to Cleveland. He tells that story.
That is insane.
You know, and he was right. You know why? Because they were not bright enough. Because they basically gave it all away to DC for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of story in comics too, of people getting completely screwed over. The people who make this come up with the ideas and make the art getting the least amount of money. It's like many businesses, it's a dirty one.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So you were in the thick of it in New York City growing up. What was New York like back then?
Wonderfully disgusting. It was hot. It was dirty. Times Square was filthy. It was dangerous. There were like gay bookstores everywhere. You know, it was like SVA was like, you know, you get off the 6th train with all the graffiti. It was everything those 1970 movies are, you know, like Serpico and stuff. It just looks disgusting. But man, what a great time.
Yeah. I'm jealous of the people who got to experience that, because it's like you could actually own some property, or at least rent a substantial, you know, amount of property and like build cool stuff back then, just being a schmo. Whereas now it's like everything is snatched up and you better have some VC funding if you want to do anything here. But, yeah, that's cool. That's a exciting way to grow up. Do you have memories of the old country? You said you were 6 years old when you came here.
Yes,
so you might have
of course. Yeah, I have this like memory that I retain everything from, like, you know. So I remember basically everything. Like, I have like a very first. I literally have my very first memory where I'm driving. Where I'm riding. We lived like in an old, like, must have been at least 200-year-old courtyard building. Yeah. It was like this courtyard upstairs. And I remember where Skynet, where I achieved consciousness. It's like I'm riding on my tricycle on this thing and I'm looking around. That's my first memory. How cinematic is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, for fun, what we used to do is I would take apricot pits, and there was a crack in the flooring, the marble or slate flooring. And it would, just the right place for a pit. And I would take my father's hammer. Here's a 3-year-old with a hammer, you know, no problem. What the hell? Boom, cracking open nuts. You know, that's what you do in Romania.
Sounds so romantic. Cracking the nuts.
Oh, so you, So yes, that's Sonia at four. Everybody's named Sonia.
That's funny. Yeah. So you wanted to be an illustrator. You decided you didn't. Yep. You didn't. You saw the competition and said no thanks. Which I believe me, as someone who forces himself to draw stuff, knowing that there's a world of people a trillion times better.
You're good.
I appreciate it. But I know the feeling. But what did your early career look like? When did you, like, how soon out of school were you getting work, and what kind of work were you doing? Like, what did tell me about that time?
Okay, so quick aside. So sure. My second year, I took a media course, and this, and the teacher's name is, and the professor's name is Donald Knoob, K-N-O-O-B. He's from Pittsburgh, works in advertising a little bit. And he tells my friend, Hannah Strauss, who was a great illustrator, which she ended up working for Disney, drawing like storyboards and stuff. Lovely, lovely person. And he tells her, your friend Julius will never amount to anything. He doesn't have it. And Hannah tells me, and I took it as a wake-up call, as opposed to, you know, what is he talking about? I drop the ego. Obviously, he sees a flaw. Take care of it. So, you know, I decided, I did. And so my senior year, we had a work fair at SVA, you know, like to get jobs, and went through it. And of course, everybody downplays you. Mm. Oh yeah, well, your stuff is okay. Had an advertising portfolio. So I went on vacation. I come back, there's like a dozen phone calls from two agencies. Where are you? And I said, you told me I wasn't good enough. Huh. I brought back my attitude. Don't worry, it came back to hit me. They said, no. So I interviewed, and like a job, like within like 6 weeks, after I graduated.
Wow.
With foot cone and belding.
Okay. My wife's aunt and uncle are heavy in advertising. I guess this is my aside, he did the Beef It's What's for Dinner. You remember this?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, with the Aaron Copland in the background.
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess I have a lot of advertisers in my life now.
Yeah.
But what do I want to ask here? Sorry, I'm like, it's 82 degrees in here, so I need to get a higher powered AC. Yeah. My brain's cooking. But what level of agency are we talking about?
Foot Cone and Belding was one of the top agencies at the time. Actually, they were founded in Chicago. They were like one of the early agencies, like Leo Burnett, J. Walter Thompson, one of the very early agencies. And Albert Lasker was one of the founders. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but there's a lot of hospitals with his name on it.
Okay.
On him. He made his money. Basically, he was just the guy who basically was smarter than Foot Cone or Belding and ended up with the owning the place. The reason it was named Foot Cone and Belding. Foot was in New York. Cone was in Chicago, Fairfax Cone. And Don Belding was in L.A.
Got it.
So they named it from east to west.
That's funny.
They indoctrinated us very well. So, yeah. So basically, you're like just like doing comps for people, for your creator, for the guy you're working for. You're an assistant art director. You're doing very little.
What year is this?
This is 1978 to 79.
Okay.
It's still Mad Men era.
Yeah.
And I'm going to drop names that people don't know, but even though they're no longer with us, Joel Saperstein was this old guy that he used to work on cigarette accounts because we had a cigarette account, and he wrote like the Winston ads back in the 60s, you know, and
Winston smoker, takes good, yeah. Like a cigarette should, that thing.
Joel Saperstein.
Nice.
So one night we're working real late, and he goes, now you thought it's all girls and sex, didn't you? Love Joel.
That's great.
First line I wrote, I was working. They had Emigrant Savings Bank, and they were working with Eli Wallach, was the celebrity. And you know, there's a broken heart for every light on Broadway, but who fixes the lights? That was what I wrote. It was for a commercial, and you know, and we shot it in Times Square. You know, because back then it was before the days of LEDs, so it was really, there were light bulbs in those things. So.
Yeah.
It was cool.
That's wild. Yeah, you really did live the real New York City ad man life.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That was 1978. Yeah.
Were you boozing clients and all that? Were you involved in that aspect?
No. They don't get the juniors in those meetings.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right.
But then after working there for a year, they made a big mistake.
Uh-oh.
They sent me on a training program.
Okay.
Why are you sending a guy who's already been in the business for a year on a training program, you know? And I was a wise ass. Me and this guy, John Claps, we basically got booted a month into the program.
For what? Yeah. What'd you do?
I did a lot. I was, first of all, I complained.
Okay.
I said, why am I earning less than the people you're just hiring out of school?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
You know, I was starting at 8.5, and these kids were, a year later, were starting at 10.
Oh.
$1,500 is a lot of money.
Yeah, back then. Yeah. Back when the dollar was strong.
When the dollar was strong and the country was going to hell because of Jimmy Carter. and inflation was at 20%.
Oh, man.
You know, so there you go. So it goes on. That's where your permanent record comes in.
Okay.
There was one of the guys running the program was guy Ed Stevens. He was the advertising teacher at Syracuse University. They hired a lot of people from Syracuse, and Ed basically makes believe he's your friend, but he's really taking notes and doing a psychological profile. And then there was Maxine Pietro. She was from the New York office. She was the hiring person. Maxine knew the Beatles.
Oh wow!
She also wrote a book, How to Get a Job in Advertising.
Okay.
She was really good, but she also was like, you know, she did not like my attitude very much. and then, you know, like they would come in and like try to teach you stuff. Like, who could tell me what the first image on television was? You asking me, like Mr. Trivia? And I raise my hand, I go, Felix the Cat, World's Fair, 1927. yeah. You know, well, you can't tell me what the first baseball game was, can you? I said, yeah, Columbia University. You want to know the score? That doesn't sit well with these people.
Right, right. So yeah, the Ron teacher Hoff, doesn't like to hear the student.
They weren't teachers. They didn't want to be there, and neither did we.
Right.
But I've already been there for a year. What are you bothering me for, you know?
So you're smoking your own stuff. You're high on the horse, and this bites you in the ass somehow?
Yeah, oh yeah, it did. I was on the street for a year. I was like blacklisted for a year over this.
Is like advertising like a tight-knit group? Everybody knows each other?
No. But you know, they check your references. You know, look, you're just starting out. They check your references, right?
Got it.
So, I like this guy's book. He's good. He's smart. What do you know about him? Oh yeah, he was dropped from the footcomb program. You know, it's like doesn't sit well, does it?
Yeah. Gotcha. So how did you overcome that? What did that look like?
Well, again, you know, I ran into the right guy at the right time.
Hmm.
And his name, unfortunately, escapes me right now. But he was a wonderful guy at Lieber Katz. And Hy Varon was the guy who hired me. And Jack Silverman, that was his name. Jack Silverman was the creative director. And Jack liked me. It was something about me he liked, as you know, it was my Brooklyn stuff. It was the Romania thing. It was just, you know, the general stuff. He like really took a liking to me. And so they hired me.
Got it. You're dropping a lot of Jewish names. Is this like heavy Jewish influence in the advertising world?
There is. And yeah, I'm glad you picked up on it because I wasn't going to say it. Because, you know,
yeah, you got to leave it to the goy. You got to leave it to the conspiratorial goy.
You know who does not like to play the Jew card, who I keep telling, well, you know, why don't you play the Jew card? You're like, look at me. No, they're, oh, it's, oh my God. Ed Miller. Oh God. Who was a producer. They all, and you know, and like I've become their father confessor because it's like, I grew up Jewish and then I had a ham sandwich. Yes, you had a, okay. What do you want? You want me to absolve you? I absolve you. Okay. You're absolved. You know, let's go to Yom Kippur services, you know? Oh, there were so many nice people. Herb Miller, that was a producer thing. Anyway, they were all, yeah.
That's great. And then, what, so you're working on more general advertising? General,
yes,
at that
yes,
point.
Yes. At that point, I'm working on IBM personal computers. I don't remember if you've ever seen these commercials with, like, they did a Charlie Chaplin thing.
No, I don't remember that one. What describe
it. It was just the ease of use. A computer from modern times, they played off of that. So they're doing that. And then of course, because of my background with, FCB with cigarettes at FCB, they had Kent. Now they had, also, you know, it was RJ. Now FCB has RJ Reynolds. I mean, not FCB, Lieber Katz, my second agency. Again, more Jews, Lieber Katz, Stanley Katz. He started, that's a very, very much a madman story. His father was a furrier. And he did all the advertising for the fur council. He did the mink stuff.
Oh, wow.
The mink account. They had like the Black Llama account, which is a famous mink account from back then.
Is this primarily magazine work you're doing, or is it no, television?
Magazine. Yeah, no TV yet, really.
Okay.
So I'm there for about a year, just over a year. And I decide, you know, it's time to move on because there wasn't enough advancement. Mm. And I get hired at Bozell Jacobs, not by my good friend Bob Feinberg.
I'm sensing a theme here.
By Sandy, his name was Sandy. Who changed his name? His real name was Fink, and I'm very good friends, of course, with anyway. But David Bell runs the agency. David Bell's not Jewish. Okay. Chuck Peebler runs the agency. They're not Jewish. So I am also. I'm playing both sides. I'm doing okay.
Got it. That's great.
Sandy Evans is the guy I'm working for. He's the creative director. He changes his name from Sandy Fink. Also, he's from Chicago. Really, like, you know, Jewish background, but again, hides it.
See, I have the opposite thing. People assume I'm Jewish, and if I think I can get something from it, I'll just let them believe that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so they have... still no toys.
Okay.
And
still so like general, assistant or are you full
no,
art director?
No, now I'm already an art director.
Got it.
And I work on Minolta copiers with Tony Randall. We also had Newsweek Business Week magazine, Avis Rent-A-Car. So like real yeah. clients, you know? So that's a lot of fun, and that's where you know I start to really figure it out.
Right. Describe for people what an art director does. You know, you don't have to go in crazy, but like just give it like a general idea of like what that entails. What does that look like? You get you're working on Avis. You're not doing the illustrations or the photography. So what is the art director doing?
You're sitting with a writer and you come up with a concept.
Got it.
So the writer writes the script and the art director sort of like plans it out, helps with the wording as well, gives it the look. Actually, you both work in tandem, but you know, it depends what your title is and where you went to school, you know? So I worked with some very talented writer, Ray Pelletier, who is a wonderful man, very talented, very, very low key, which was really good because obviously I'm not. And I learned how to be low key from Ray. Thing is, this is like so again New York and very much. Ray smokes 4 packs a day.
Oh man! Chimney, oh my! God.
And drinks nothing but coffee, constantly. It's literally like I'm in a sitcom, you know. Yeah. And the reason I get to work with Ray is nobody else wants to work with Ray because he smokes.
Oh, that's funny.
But Ray is terrific. And my parents, my mother smoked. And without an adverse effect. She was able to quit once she got the shakes, so she gave it up later in life. Fine. But, you know, and I think Ray is still with us as well. You know, so
there you go.
But the point is, I'm willing to work with him because I can stand the smoke.
Got it.
And we do some very nice stuff, you know. And I also worked on this, again, they get an account, a Jewish bank, Bank Leumi. It's an international bank. Who do you give the account? Who do you put on the account?
The Romanian kid.
The Romanian Jewish kid, yeah. Who, of course, writes the headline, a bank like this comes around only once every 5,000 years. If the world is created in 6 days, why should it take a month to get a loan? Oh, I do all the biblical puns.
That's great. Yep. You knew the target market. That's perfect.
That's it. You gotta know your audience, right?
So you're working and killing it in New York advertising. You're working with all the wisecracking old school New York Jews. You're doing
as
your
Mel
thing.
Brooks says, I work with the great and the near great. When he's doing the 2,000-year-old man. And you're the great and the near great. Bill, another one. Bill Appleman is now okay. So now I get a new creative director, Bill Appleman. Again, another one, and he likes me too. So advance.
I'm jealous, us guys. We don't have that vibe.
Don't worry. There's plenty of Goyim stories too. But I just think that I'm just telling you my path. Work for guy Mars Mayhew. You couldn't get more WASPy than Mars. Not Mars, Mars, M-A-R-S-E. And he had the Jaguar account.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah. No Jews allowed on that.
Was that how it worked?
No. Mars was terrific. And his daughter worked at the agency too. There are very few people who I worked with that I could say, ooh, what was that? Everybody had a good side. Everybody had a sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, That's cool. And it was all good. Yeah.
Yeah. I am curious about advertising. Cause like you, I like to come up with, you know, witty jokes or just quick one-liners and things like that. Like I like that kind of, abbreviated, fast kind of to the point type of writing and stuff like that. So I have always been interested. I've never really pursued it beyond, I've worked in media and I've worked in entertainment, but yeah, advertising is kind of interesting to me.
You were at the wrong time in history. Because if you would have been back in the 90s, and if you would have come to the agency where I talk about next, which is where I really made my stuff in toys, which is Griffin Bacall, Heavenly Sound, please, fabulous place. wonderful place, great memories, everything. Joe Bacall did not hire you because of advertising. Joe Bacall hired you because of your life experience and because you were different.
That's cool.
And Tom Griffin, also, who is his partner, could not say enough about both of them. Basically, about everybody I worked with, but those two. I mean, it was such a family that we worked at, and we really, everybody cared about everybody, and that's why the work became so memorable, because it wasn't just work. It was like we put everything we knew into it. Are you familiar with Sam Register?
I feel like I know the name, but no.
Oh, yeah, you know the name. Sam Register's head of animation at DC.
Oh, okay.
Warner Brothers?
Yeah.
Guess who gave him his first job?
You?
At
No.
He
kidding.
Came, he had met Tom Griffin. He was not an actor, he was an illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
Meets Tom Griffin, and Tom says, oh, this guy might be interesting. Shows him Joe. Joe then says, Julius, interview him. Let me know what you think. Sam has got all the great, he's a terrific guy. And so I said to Joe, I said, you have to hire him. He's perfect. He's perfect for us. And he did. And Then he went on to Cartoon Network when that was founded.
Wow.
And then he went on to Warner Brothers when that was bought. And Sam is just one of the most talented people. And, you know, when he first started, what he did was he repurposed the old G.I. Joe animation and stuff, you know. That was
For like Adult Swim and stuff or whatever?
No, it was it was part of Sunbow. Sunbow was a subsidiary of Griffin McCall that Joe started. It was a production company. What was it called? Space Roller Coaster, I think, was the show that they produced at one time when you were probably before you were born. Great Space Roller Coaster and other stuff. My Little Pony, they produced. The G.I. Joe stuff, Transformers. If you look at the movie Leon, the movie
Professional?
I'm talking about. Professional. They're playing a Transformers commercial or part of the program. No, part of the programming on the girl on the spot when the girl is watching when they kill her family.
Yeah,
and Joe and Tom's names are in the credits because of that.
That's awesome. We just, my wife and I just watched that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
that's
Leon funny. The Professional. Yeah, that was it. That's its original name.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, man.
So you're wheeling and dealing. You're getting your. It is interesting to me that I feel like there, New York media is smaller a world than you realize. You bump into a lot of people that go on to make interesting things and. You come across a lot of people and it's
Danny Liner. You know Danny, who passed away. Yes, you do. The director. Where's my car? Jumping at the Boneyard was a short he did. He went to
SUNY Purchase.
So he used to produce. He was a producer at the Griffin McCall, like a freelance producer.
Got it.
And Joe and Tom gave him the space like for pre-proing his shorts.
That's awesome.
This is how many places are like that.
Yeah.
That encourage their creativity.
Yeah.
If you had a project and you came to Joe and Tom, they would let you do it.
That's cool.
It was.
Yeah, that's a gift for sure. I haven't seen a lot of that working freelance these days.
Right.
I also haven't seen a lot of hiring for differences in interesting backgrounds either. Like I feel like a lot of places I work, there's a type of person who gets the job there and I'm like I somehow tricked people into thinking I'm one of them and that's why I'm there. It feels like a different mindset. It feels like more corporate now and buttoned down, whereas what you're describing sounds very creative, sounds very loose and fun. To be honest.
Well, yeah, it was. Look, we'd stay there till 9. I mean, 10 sometimes. You know, there was wine in the office, which you'd pull out. We'd order dinners. We'd all get, and you wouldn't be eating in your office. You'd be going to a conference room, and everybody was working late. Would be doing it. We had a studio there, you know, with illustrators who would do storyboards. It was like really a lot of fun. I mean, you know, it's like you got to. It was. The closest thing I can say is it's very much like the Dick Van Dyke Show, you know. if anybody is watches it on MeTV or remembers any of that stuff, but it was creative atmosphere.
That's fun. What was one of your favorite campaigns you worked on?
All right. Okay. So now we got to go back a little bit. We got to go back to Bozell Jacobs, which then merges with Kenyon Eckhart, becomes BJKE. They have Chrysler, you know, all that stuff. And they get Tyco Toys.
Nice.
Are you familiar with what Tyco was?
I'm trying to think, is it like Micronauts or something or Micro Machines or no?
Nah. They had Dinobots or something like one of those Dino Riders, which was a cartoon series. They have Dino Riders. They have RC cars.
Ooh,
this is fun. Like a boy's wet dream. you go to a client meeting and like, you know, there's the closet and you say to the guy working there, what do you got today? Can you give me something? and he gives you a Lamborghini, an RC 9.6 volt turbo Lamborghini. Yeah. And you bring this home and your wife looks at you like you're crazy, but all your friends are just so jealous.
Unleash the Typhoon, the only 9.6 V radio controlled hovercraft in the world. The Typhoon hovercraft blasts over the ground on a cushion of air. You command the Typhoon by radio control. Three powerful turbo motors for straight line speed. Do a 360. Now, Typhoon hits the water. Incredible. The RC that runs on land and water. Typhoon. You've got the turbo power to handle anything. Typhoon and Mini Typhoon, the only 9.6 V radio control hovercraft in the world from Tyco.
It all starts when Jay Schulberg, who's now the creative director at Bozell, comes into my office and goes, Julius, they need help on the toy business. Do you mind? And I go, nope, I don't mind. Next thing you know, I'm the toy guy. And, you know, one of the first things I work on is the Martin Short, Ed Grimley, talking doll.
That's awesome. That's which is great. Again,
and I go to a presentation and I have hair at the time and I put it like up and I have a shirt that's like that and I present like Ed Grimley, you know, don't you know? You know? Well, there you go. I'm now sealing, and then I present it to Martin Short the same way. And it's like, wow. Oh my god! And we go to LA to shoot and we just have a great time, and you know, it's just so that's like one of the first. That yeah, things that are awesome. Just great.
Are you ready to go completely mental? It's the Ed Grimley talking doll.
This is the surprise I'm gonna say.
I'm as doomed can be, you know.
Now you can take Ed everywhere.
This is like my luckiest of lucky days.
Pull his string and he says six completely mental things.
Oh, is this not like the best vacation or what?
Oh, give me a break.
Best time already? Who knew?
I'm going completely mental, I must say.
Talking Ed Grimley. He's more than a talking doll. He's Ed Grimley.
And before I got into toys, the last thing I did, which is probably what got me onto toys, because I guess Jay said was not happy with it, but I don't know. I'm just kidding. I did the very first pharmaceutical commercial.
Really?
It was for Pfizer, and it was the Tin Man.
For
the Wizard of Oz Tin Man for okay. Pfizer. You guys can look it up. It's really a great commercial. Kenya Goda produced it. Terry Lovelock was the director in London. The reason I drop names is because this shows that I do not have Alzheimer's. I remember all these people. So, you know, I have all my faculties. by the way, I also worked with writer Marty Kaufman. Surprise. So anyway, the Tin Man, which is really a fun commercial. We recreated the Tin Man exactly like he looked in The Wizard of Oz. Wow. The one mistake we made is somebody said, there's this mime that can stay in a costume all day. He'd be perfect. And we hired a mime. And the freaking mime couldn't do the Tin Man right. And I had to like show him exactly what to do. And it was like so frustrating because he kept going, stop being a mime. You're a Tin Man.
That's hilarious. What right. Do you remember what product they were selling?
Yes, it was Pfizer Feldene. Feldene was an arthritis drug. That's why the Tin Man was perfect.
Got it.
And we created the place where the Tin Man lived. I looked at the Wizard of Oz. I was a big fan of the Wizard of Oz. I did a lot of research. We recreated his cottage, and the alarm clock and everything. It was like so much fun.
That's cool.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I worked on a Comedy Central show, and one of the coolest things and places I like to hang out was the prop master was on set, and he had his own studio basically. And yeah, just to go in and see like them creating these wacky props for like throwaway gags and stuff. It was really cool. That seems like a fun gig as well.
Yeah.
Just like making things, just seems fun to me. Right. That's awesome. I quite liked the Ed Grimley cartoon when I was a young
yes,
kid.
Yes, that's why we did the
For the doll, I assume. Yeah, that's great. Ed Grimley is such a funny character. I always I loved Martin Short when I was a little kid. I thought he was hilarious. Yep. Just so like goofy and like he kind of is childlike in his like kind of sense of humor. He's very animated and he's so funny.
Martin Short is very, as you say, is such so broad. He could do everything.
It's true.
And he's got so much shtick that he has, like from his SCTV days.
Yeah.
You think he's coming up with it right now, but it's like stuff that's in the back of his mind already for years.
Yeah, yeah.
His repertoire of stuff is so vast.
That's cool. Yeah. His whole Jiminy Glick show.
Oh, yeah. Jiminy Glick is so funny. So fabulous.
God, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's very, very cool. So you become the toy man. You specialize in toys. Rattle off some toys you've worked on, because you're now getting into a time where this is probably stuff people know of.
How old are you?
I'm 40. Exactly? I'm 40.
Okay. All right. I don't know this. Maybe. Yeah. You might be. Okay. Are you familiar with SpyTech?
I vaguely do. Yes.
It was Tyco.
Was that like the sound gun where you could like, yes.
SpyTech, case 101. The Whistler's made his move. Use your SpyTech binoculars to keep him in sight.
He's coming your way.
The SpyTech intruder alert detects his movement.
He's on yours.
You've lost him. Set up the SpyTech long-range microphone. You can hear the smallest sounds like they were right up close. You've got him now.
They have SpyTech. They know.
SpyTech, high-tech equipment that works. Each sold separately, new from Tyco.
Okay, you don't know. You want to know who shot that?
Who shot it?
John Badham.
John, why do I know? You know so many names. I got to get better.
John Badham directed Saturday Night Fever, Blue Thunder, War Games. He worked on Lost later on. He was an A director in Hollywood. And we had very good producers at Bozell, and John was available. And Ken Yagoda said, why don't you use John Badham? Oh, is he available? Yeah, he'll do it. And we shot on the back lot of Universal.
That's great. Man, I didn't realize that like they're pulling like super high level talent for this stuff. Like
back then, yeah. And I made sure, like if you look at those commercials, you will find people, you go, he looks familiar. I hired all these like B actors for parts that if I saw anybody showed up in a casting call that was like from a sitcom in the 60s, I made sure he was in my commercial because it's like an Easter egg.
Yeah. That's so funny. Damn.
Stanley Camel, who's been in like every Kojak and probably Law and Orders and stuff, is in one of the SpyTech commercials. You know, they're loaded with these things.
Right.
It's very hard to find the old SpyTech commercials. So
on a commercial, and you at that point, you're a creative director.
Yeah.
So is there a director as well? Or are.
Yes.
OK, so you have. So who
like, I just do the storyboard, and then I work with the director and production company and producers. And
so you draw out the idea of it. Here's what this thing actually is, and then you hire a director to actually handle the actual onset direction.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
And by the way, the guy who produced those early SpyTechs is Rob Runbacon, who is part owner in John's Pizza downtown now, and also a school teacher. Shout out to Rob.
Damn.
Also from Brooklyn.
This is impressive, I have to say, your ability to just throw all these names out there and resume lines. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. Pretty good. That's a good skill to have in business. Pay attention, folks.
Yep.
I got to work on that.
John Badham was terrific to work with. I mean, Saturday Night Fever molded me. Yeah. And so I had him there. We're on set. They go, he also did Bird on a Wire with Goldie Hawn and Chevy Chase. I said, tell me about it. What was it like? And he did. And it was like, okay, cool. You know, so I got an inside feel on it, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome. That's great. Did you,
so then we come to, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, please go ahead. Go ahead.
No. Go for your question.
I was going to ask, for the audience, I'm friends with your son, and he would often talk about going to Italy to do stuff. Is that
That was later on. That was later on. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, yeah, that's why I was like, you go, because I thought I was like, Alice is gonna
be a good
stop in the conversation.
So back to get to spots that you all know, which is what I think. I don't know what your audience is into, but you know, they get a good lesson here on stuff. Okay, so like this, Mr. Bucket. There's Gator Golf.
Yes,
Golf, written by Dan Lombardi.
Gator Golf, step right up.
What could be greater than golf with a gator?
Gator Golf, give it a whack. Gator Golf, throw it right back. Gator Golf, what could be greater than playing a game of golf with a gator?
It's Gator Golf. Hit the ball in his mouth to score. The gator will toss it back out.
Gator Golf, hit the ball in his mouth. Gator Golf, he'll turn all about.
Can you take a shot, Dad?
Okay.
You watch your pro.
Gator Golf, what could be greater than playing a game of golf with a gator?
Gator Golf.
Oh, so
I think Mark Mazut did the board.
That's crazy.
Dan is not Jewish, and neither is Mark.
I'm not keeping score.
There's no keeping score, but you know, and Dan is a big proponent. He's trying to get a GBI project off the board as well, Griffin Bacall. So you know, this is a hopefully a training run. Lloyd Goldfein. I don't know if anybody knows Lloyd. I feel like I'm doing a telethon here. I'm reading off the thing. Lloyd worked at there. He worked on G.I. Joe for years with Rob Trevolino. And then he went off to Mattel, and then he went off to 4Kids advertising. So a lot of stuff you used to watch at 4Kids, Lloyd was very involved in.
Yeah. Did you?
Like Yu-Gi-Oh! And all that stuff, yeah.
Were you into toys before toys? Because you seem
Yeah.
It seems like, because you're talking comic books, you're talking toys, cartoons. That kind of sounds like stuff you're actually interested in as a person.
Yes.
What were you into? Like, what were you, what got you excited?
Just the regular stuff. Marvel Comics was the big deal. Anything that was on TV, I used to watch.
Yeah.
Any hero stuff. I used to collect all that stuff. Very, very big in Star Trek.
Yeah, me too. I love Star Trek. I don't know if I feel I may have told you this, but I grew up homeschooled, and we didn't have an actual television like
oh my god,
TV stations. But my uncle was like, no, we can't allow this. And he would tape like television, send VHS tapes in the mail. And that was like the loophole. My parents would let us watch those.
OK,
so he would tape like the best of the best. He and my grandfather had great taste in entertainment. So we just had the best of like cartoons and Star Trek and dramas. And like, so I like devoured that stuff. Obviously, you know, you're at home all the time, bored.
Yeah.
So when those VHSs came in the mail, like I was like watching 5 episodes of DuckTales in a row, for example.
Yeah.
And then Star Trek Next Generation nonstop.
Like, yeah.
I was all very, very into that as well. And that informed what I'm interested in to this day. So it sounds like very similar to you. You're actually into this stuff, and then you're getting to actually work on it. That's pretty
getting
to
work awesome. On it. Yeah. I have in storage, I have every Star Trek action figure from Next Generation, from that Playmates world, with the exception of like the Red Data. Okay. which was from the one with the Borg, you know, where they there's a card that's also they were outrageously priced. It's like Beanie Baby prices. I can live without those. But I pretty much have every one of them. I don't know what to do with them, but
that's one of my questions. What are some cool things you have in your collection? So you got Star Trek. Been to your Manhattan apartment, and you have toys everywhere. You've got you're a collector as well.
Those toys are a lot of those toys were things I worked on.
Got it.
And duplicates of things I like.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff also, like I said, I have a lot of stuff that's in storage.
Got it.
That never been opened.
I was gonna say, are you a take it out of the box guy or leave it in?
Me and my friends, like Lloyd and, oh my God, we were so crazy once. Pizza Hut had these Star Wars cups back in the 90s.
Yeah, the cups were huge. Like McDonald's had a lot of cups. Yeah,
but this was a Pizza Hut promotion, and it was a blizzard. And Lloyd, myself, and Rob are working late, and we start walking out in the snow looking for the Chase cup that's hard to find that night. That's what we were into. That type of shit. Then, of course, Power Rangers comes up.
Oh, yeah.
And before anybody knows about the figures, I find out that on Mott Street, they're selling the Japanese ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay? And again, in the snow, I'm taking these guys to Mott Street, to this one little place, which basically, you know, is like, where are we? You know, are we going to get kidnapped here? Whatever, you know. This, and boom, you know. Yeah, we got We're running around the office with like Power Rangers toys.
That's,
you know,
hilarious.
Oh my God.
Are you interested at all in the art toy thing? Do you know about this? Like these like low, like super custom artists make like, you know, like a run of like 100 like soft vinyl Japanese style toys or anything?
I never understood that.
Yeah.
I never understood that stuff. I cannot comprehend it. You know, that toy company, that's the name I can't remember, of course, the ones that have those little ones. It's like, why do I want something that doesn't look like what I'm playing, what I like?
Right.
You know?
I hear you. I'm sort of interested in, it's called Safubi. It's like the Japanese vinyl, like the kaiju monsters. I like the monsters. They look cool.
Right.
But I hear you. Like dropping, you know, $200 on an art toy is a bit much.
Yeah. One day I'm at Hasbro and this young guy shows me this toy. He goes, what do you think of this? It's Pokemon. We're going to pass on it.
Oh.
And I go, yeah, it doesn't look like anything. That's my moment.
Well, that's going to be a clip for sure.
Oh, my God. And there's a guy, I will not mention his name, who supposedly his father was a porn star named Long Dong Silver.
Oh, God.
Who worked at Hasbro. And I'm not mentioning names. Sorry. Not going to drop his name.
That's hilarious. Man, so yeah, you're a true fan. You actually cared about
everybody.
This stuff.
We all were. Well, most of us were.
Yeah, yeah.
The women who worked there were, you know, just marginal.
That's how it always goes. It's the guys who are the big dorks, and then the girls are like, "Oh my God. Play with your toys, weirdos."
The women cared more about what the hot restaurant was that week.
Yeah. Yep. That's still true to this day.
Right.
For the most part.
I did one of the Operation commercials.
I was just talking about Operation the other day. I was telling my wife, you know, the original, he didn't have underwear. His just his belly hung over his crotch.
Yep. Yeah, I know.
And I'm like, it's so lame. They gave him like polka dot underwear now.
Yep. So
that was a cool idea for a toy, actually. It was just a very, it felt like this weirdly reversed engineered, like, idea of like, oh, if you connect the circuit it makes a noise, how can we turn this into a toy? It's just so strange, but it was cool. I liked it a lot.
Back then there were inventors who came up with the mechanisms and they licensed it out.
Yeah.
And you know, they got like, I think, 6 points for it. I think that was the going rate, 6%.
Oh, of all sales. Wow.
So it was a good deal.
Oh yes, yeah,
they got 6. Their agent gets like 2 or 3. So yeah, but they're still making good money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Operation is one of those things.
That's cool.
But yeah, you know, there's a lot of Operation. Joe Donne was like the Operation king. He was writer, creative director at Griffith McCall and other places. He also did a lot of them. Dan Lombardi wrote, I think the one I worked on, Is It Water on the Knee? Operation. Yeah. What is that? $500 fee? Operation. I'm the doctor for you.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Man. You know, there's a celebrity. The guy who was in that is also a celebrity. I worked on, again, this is another one written by Richie Solomon, was Mr. Perfection.
Oh, I feel like I know
the, this. The guy in the blue, the guy who looks like Jay Leno because we put a prosthetic chin on him.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And like his chest explodes in yellow.
This is hilarious. Were you a board game person at all? Were you?
No.
No? Okay.
No, just and curious. Here I am working on Milton Bradley, you know, and I work on Yahtzee and I work on all this stuff. And it's like, I'm okay with board games, but no, you know, I don't have time for this. I don't have the, you know.
You're busy in the middle of a blizzard getting a Star Wars cup or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And going to London and picking up Thunderbird toys, which are not available in the States yet.
Oh man. You're a true you're the real deal, Julius.
We all were.
That's good. That's probably why all those commercials were so catchy and memorable, because you actually cared.
You know what? We didn't do commercials that were today. Unfortunately, what's happened is everything is a catalog. Mm. The clients just want just tell me what it does. Just show it to me. We, you know, it's like, okay, you're in a visual medium. Why are you just? We did like stuff that was different.
Yeah,
it was like stuff that. And this is my entire toy career is based on this. I want to do a commercial that when kids are in a bar in their late 20s, start talking about it, I go, do you remember that commercial? Do you know what they were doing? They were knocking off this movie. And I, you know, it's like, or that comes from, that's from here. It's like, you know, it's like, that's the point. I want these things to be adult. I don't want them to be stupid and childish.
Right.
I don't do them for kids. I do them for myself because kids are smart.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the best kids entertainment and things like that is stuff that is not talking down to the audience. It's
right.
You're having them meet you at a higher level.
Transformers, more than meets the eye. Come on.
Yeah. The classic.
Nobody knows where that. Nobody knows who came up with that line.
Really?
Nobody knows. It's been a mystery. You know, it could be something that was translated from Japanese. We don't know.
That's funny. So,
I worked on Transformers as well, by the way.
You've done it all, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So you just casually mentioned about like toy commercials today. So you're currently still working.
yes, I am.
Are you working for yourself? Do you work for a company? Where are you working?
I work for myself. I'm a contract worker, as they say. I guess, you know.
Got it.
But what's changed is, I mean, I was the boy king. I used to do action figures. You know, it's like, all that type of stuff.
All right.
And then all of a sudden, back like after the I go from Griffin McCall when that sort of, you know. I move on to Behringer Greenhouse in Webster. It's just Behringer Greenhouse at some point. Yes, and they are both Jewish.
I didn't.
Bill Behringer, by the way, passed away this year. He's a very loved man by a lot of people. Can't give him enough credit. Marty Greenhouse, terrific, terrific person as well. Everybody who worked there. A lot of people who worked there were not Jewish, and they were just as wonderful. Bob Marks, who was Jewish. Anyway. Dan Trink, who runs a gym, who's like now an Iron Man and runs a gym. Just terrific. After that, I end up freelancing and I get a call from somebody I used to work with, Nancy Hauptman. And she goes, you want to do a pitch? I go, sure. So we pitch Isaac Larian, who MGA Entertainment Toys. They did Bratz at the time.
Oh yeah.
And Isaac, and I'll keep it short to that. Isaac liked us, and Nancy's been working for him straight for like since like 2000, God knows what. I've sort of been freelancing there.
That's wild. So you're still cooking, baby.
Still cooking, and I also work on the Ninja Turtles.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, Ninja Turtles.
And Power Rangers.
Damn. That's great. That's really cool. Do you, working for yourself, sounds like you have like, this woman you're working with, you have like a small team that you work with often, or
we're the team.
The two of you.
Yeah.
Got it. Do you do business as your own name or do you have like a cool company name?
No, just make out the check to me.
Good. I'm glad.
There's nothing. Yeah, look, there's nothing, you know. Griffin McCall became Uproar. Okay. And then Hasbro went in-house and did something called Cake Mix. Production company have names like Luis Ruiz, who's the director, has done a lot of great commercials over the years. He did a company called Mustache. And I worked for this guy, Chris Foligno, who's the director, good friend. Just a lot of stuff.
Yeah. How many campaigns do you do a year? Does it depend?
Depends. Depends.
Yeah.
But you know, like in a real busy year, I mean, there were times I would do like 40, 50 spots a year.
Wow. Wow.
Which is insane. Yeah. And that's, you know,
it's like one a week.
Yeah. No, back in the day when, so I worked also for this Rotter Creative Group, Steve Rotter. And he does Playmates Toys and other toy companies. So yeah, before he semi-retired, still in the business, but like not semi-retired. He was at one point had his fingers in almost every toy company, you know, which was really cool. And he basically started everybody going to Italy.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, this is how I found out you worked in toys. Your son was telling me stories of going to Italy with you to work on. I think it was the Tech Dex, the finger skateboard thing.
Is yeah, that correct. There was Oh, the other one is the other big one was Squinkies.
Squinkies? What's Squinkies? You
remember Squinkies?
No,
Squinkies was huge.
I missed that
back
one.
Back in like 2000. There were these like little. They came in these like little balls, and they were these like little squishy toys. Nothing. They were like, and they became a phenomenon for about 2 or 3 years.
That's so funny. I'm looking at them right the rent. Now.
Squinky, squinky, squinkies, squishy, squashy, squishy, fun.
Oh, they are fun. They kind of have a Pokemon thing going on. Cute little animals coming a ball.
That was Blip Toys out of Minnesota. Also wonderful people.
Oh, they made a Nintendo DS game. Two of them. Squinkies 2.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Squinkies was huge.
Yeah, I have no idea. That's great. These look cool, actually. Man, toys are fun. Have you ever toyed with the idea of designing your own toy for fun or
no.
fun or profit? No?
No, because there's no money in it unless you... If you're a toy company, you're rolling the dice.
Yeah.
And Isaac Larian knows how to roll dice very well. And I mm-hmm. learned a lot from him because you don't take a small risk for a small gain. Mm-hmm. Big risk for a small gain. Everything needs to be, it's like Vegas. Don't go anything that's less than 5 to 1. You gotta really, you know, if you're rolling, the payout's gotta be big.
Right.
Okay, I come up with a toy. What do I got to do? I'm going to go to him and say, will you market this toy? And he'll say, why am I paying you for this? He's not stupid.
Got it.
He doesn't like to pay, you know, royalties and stuff. Those days are done. So, okay, so now I do it myself. Great. So I got to go spend my money, go to China, get it manufactured. Then I got to find somebody to distribute it. Then I got to wait for the money. And then Toys R Us goes belly up and you end up losing everything.
I hear you. Are the margins slim as well, I would imagine?
They're getting slimmer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to make a physical product that catches people's eyes. I mean, I've learned that making a printed comic book instead of just posting it online like everybody else. But I have to say, it is fun to hold the thing you made in your hand. That is pretty cool.
Yes. By the way, back at SVA, I think I might have told you this. So Will's class, the goal was to print a comic book at the end of the year. And Will Eisner would do the cover.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So here's what would happen. So like we'd go to like Comic-Con or whatever, a comic convention in New York, and the SVA people would sell the comic book, and people would buy it like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except for one thing, they would rip the cover off and throw away artwork.
those fucking comic book nerds. So disrespectful.
They're like, yeah, I don't like the interiors.
Did you know that R. Crumb came to SVA and like did sketches for kids for nothing?
Really?
That's awesome. One day he was sitting there. He was visiting back in 77 or 78. And he was in the stairwell just drawing for students.
That's great.
And if anybody kept that stuff, damn, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, R. Crumb's. He just did a talk at 92nd Y a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Have you ever looked at his like sketchbook collection?
Yes, I have.
He's incredible. He's really, really good. He's impressive.
And I'm going to switch the topic to AI for a bit.
What's that?
I'm switching the topic to AI for a bit, based on R. Crumb and all these. Okay. Sure. It'll be very brief. You can probably cut it from the program or whatever.
No, it's topical, baby.
Okay. So back about 2 years ago, if you used Bing's AI stuff, I could put in R. Crumb and I would get some pretty nasty good stuff. I would put in Will Eisner, and damn, it had the feel of Will Eisner. Of course, it had like eight fingers sometimes, right. But you know, it's like, yes, but it gave you the essence.
Yeah.
About a year ago, they got so good, nothing. Everything looks like it's, you know, 3D generated crap. You really have to go and just like, it's so hard to get, and that's why I don't worry, and I think artists are protected.
Mm.
The good stuff you can't do in AI anymore. I mean, they were programming it in, but everything, you look at the deep fakes and stuff, there's nothing original. Everything looks the same.
Yeah.
So, you know, to all you artists out there listening to this, you know, Mike has a little program here, you're all safe. AI will not replace you.
Nice. It's good to hear.
The hardest thing to do is to get it. Give me a storyboard frame. It will always give me shit, and I have to like lie to it and like really, you know, like, you know, no, it's an illustration. It's comic book art, storyboard frame, advertising, pen and ink, magic marker, you know, and then occasionally I'll get something. But what it does is it gives me angles, because we all are trapped in like always like drawing the same angle.
Mm.
And this shows you different looks. And so I'll show it to Tyler. I go, Tyler, here's just some reference.
Yeah.
Which is what we used to do back when I started in the business. Reference was the thing that you needed for everything.
Yeah. Did you have like big reference libraries where you like.
Back then, yes. And the biggest library was the guy I mentioned earlier, Maurice Mahler. Mm. Maurice would, before you ever saw a commercial, he would run into Joe's office with a VHS tape that he had Linda Sheeler pull, and he'd come, Joe, look what I found. And it was like, oh my God. You know, it's like, damn you, Maurice, how did you do this? You know, how'd you get there? You know, I haven't even seen this yet.
That's so funny.
But he was the best at it. Absolutely the best.
How do you feel about like modern, like adult, like comedy cartoons these days? Like the puppet style animation, you know what I mean? You know what I'm referring to?
Everything I see is like, okay, the writing is horrible. Look, growing up, you didn't watch the Flintstones. You listened to the Flintstones. You were multitasking because you knew that nothing really moved. And you knew when they were running because you had that sound effect, you know, like the cans were.
Right.
Oh, okay, Fred is running. Okay, I get it. You know, it was like radio.
Right.
But it was well written.
Right.
All that stuff was well written. We never, because we knew Filmation was not a very good animation company. You know? Hanna-Barbera, God bless them. You have five frames for a half hour.
Right. This is true. Like, that's been a thing for a long time.
Exactly. So, you know, it's like, I don't care what stuff looks like. That's why South Park was such a breakthrough. Mm. It was bad animation.
Mm-hmm.
And the original ones, as you probably know, Santa Claus versus Jesus.
Jesus. Yeah.
That was like paper cutout.
Yeah.
It worked. It didn't have to move because the writing was brilliant.
Yeah. There's,
you know,
similar to, like, you know, you're saying, like, there's like, you're noticing a fall off in the AI. There has been such a drastic fall off in entertainment writing. It's insane. Yeah. It's insane. I don't like you watch. We've been rewatching Malcolm in the Middle, and the first of all, these people used to have to write 20 to like 20, anywhere between 20 and 30 episodes a season, which is three seasons of television now, which is insane. And they lasted way longer than, like, I feel like the average show now has three seasons if they're lucky. Like back then you'd get like seven seasons with like 22, 25 episodes a season. So their at bat is like crazy how often they have to like deliver. And the writing is just leagues better than anything that's coming out. I mean, I say that there's lots of good stuff coming out still.
Just stuff that's, but everything is, look,
I don't know what's happening. I don't know. My theory is the type of person who goes into television writing is addicted to like social media, like to Twitter. And like, it's just rotten. They don't read stories anymore. They just read social media posts. And so they've forgotten like what a story is. And so everything just kind of feels like slop and just not very good, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, it's most stuff is unwatchable.
Yeah, it is sad. I don't know why that is fully, but yeah, it is a bummer. But you make a good point about the animation. Like, I brought it up because a lot of this animation annoys me in that it just kind of like feels very stiff and whatever. But you're right. I watched all that Hanna-Barbera stuff. You know, in my case, it was like on Cartoon Network, and I enjoyed it. And you're right. It's probably because the writing of it was more engaging. It's funny that you guys would just listen to it. That makes sense.
Yeah. What am I watching here? It's just nothing's moving.
This is true. Well, we've been going for quite a bit, so why don't we wrap up here? Joyce, right. This was really interesting. Your
stick around after you're done. Stick around after you're done.
Okay. Your career is wide-ranging and fascinating, and I had no idea. You're still making hits to this day. You're a beast. You're the man behind everything from LOL Surprise to Mr. Bucket. If people
and a lot of other people too.
Of course. Well. I hear you. Let's close things out by let's say someone's listening to this and they want to get into advertising or maybe toys in general. What kind of advice would you give to a young whippersnapper?
All right, getting into toys. Their toy companies are downsizing, but if you got a love for toys, exactly what I told, the way I told you about the Griff McCall thing, don't just be, oh, I want to do toys. You have to have a broad range of experience, life experience that you then bring into what you're going to do. As far as advertising, don't even bother. It's a dinosaur. There's, you got a better shot becoming a TikTok influencer than getting than making money in advertising today.
Okay. I hear you. This is good advice. All right. Well, we'll leave it on that note. Julius, thanks so much for doing this, and I appreciate your time.